Good evening for WBAI News in New York. I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Tuesday, January 17th, 2017. President Barack Obama today commuted the prison sentence of Chelsea Manning, the former U.S. military intelligence analyst who is serving 35 years in prison for passing classified files to WikiLeaks. Over the weekend, there was a huge outpouring of support on social media with the hashtag #HugsForChelsea. It followed news of a possible commutation. More than 100,000 people signed an official WhiteHouse.gov petition, meeting the threshold to require a response from the president. Hundreds of thousands signed previous petitions. The ACLU and more than a dozen prominent LGBT organizations sent a letter to President Obama calling for Chelsea's commutation. Amnesty International was also involved. They sent a letter to President Obama, and supporters sent over 25,000 emails to the White House. Dozens of other human rights, free speech, government transparency, and civil liberties organizations called for Chelsea's release. Her sentence is now set to expire May 17th. President Obama also commuted the sentence of Puerto Rican revolutionary Oscar Lopez Rivera. Oscar Lopez has been incarcerated for more than half of his life. He's been in prison for 35 years. The Puerto Rican nationalist was sentenced to 55 years in prison for his role in the struggle for independence of the U.S. island territory. Puerto Ricans have long called for Lopez's release. He belonged to the ultra-nationalist Armed Forces of National Liberation. The group has claimed responsibility for more than 100 bombings at public and commercial buildings in U.S. cities, including in New York, Chicago, Washington, during the 70s and the 80s. Oscar Lopez and Chelsea Manning are among 209 people whose sentencing President Obama is shortening. In other news, real estate mogul and reality TV star Donald Trump's presidency is looming large on the world stage. China, for example, says it will take the kid gloves off if Trump continues to provoke it over Taiwan when he takes office. The One China policy, which doesn't recognize Taiwan, has been in place for decades, but Trump broke with this by taking a call after the election from the president of Taiwan, Tsai Ing-wen. The Taiwan independence movement has been pushing to establish the Republic of Taiwan. Today at Davos, the World Economic Summit in Switzerland, China showed up for the first time as Trump campaigned on a promise to confront China more aggressively on trade. China's president says Beijing wants to play a greater global role as the U.S. turns inward. In Iran, President Hassan Rouhani told reporters renegotiating its nuclear accord has no meaning. He said, "Mr. Trump so far has made many remarks on the deal. These are mainly slogans. I do not see it as likely that something happens in practice." He said the deal is beneficial to the U.S., but that Trump doesn't understand this. The agreement also included Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany. None have expressed interest in scrapping the deal or restoring sanctions. Rouhani said there will be no negotiations on the nuclear deal. The deal has been finalized, and it was approved in the UN Security Council. In Venezuela, President Nicolas Maduro said Monday night that he's keeping an open mind about Donald Trump and hopes to maintain respectful relations with the incoming Republican administration. Maduro said Trump won't be worse than Obama, that Obama left a legacy that the big media outlets want to hide. Maduro referred to the outgoing president's perpetual war footing in the Middle East and his alleged failure in Latin America to more forcefully condemn the removal of leftist leaders in Brazil, Honduras, and Paraguay. Maduro said the Trump era would certainly bring big changes to the world, but he urged caution and said, "Let's not jump ahead of ourselves. I want to be prudent." Trump has yet to comment on how he'll handle Venezuela. Two of his cabinet picks, Rex Tillerson, the Exxon CEO for State Department, and retired John Kelly for Homeland Security, both had a long history of feuding with the late Hugo Chavez. In a biting attack, Russian President Vladimir Putin today accused the outgoing U.S. administration of trying to undermine President-elect Donald Trump, this by spreading fake allegations, and said those who are doing it are worse than prostitutes. The statement reflected the Kremlin's boiling anger at President Obama's administration, which declined to comment on Putin's accusation. Asked about an unsubstantiated dossier outlining unverified claims that Trump engaged in sexual activity activities with prostitutes at a Moscow hotel. Putin dismissed it as fake and nonsense. He said it was part of efforts by the Obama administration to undermine the legitimacy of the president-elect, despite his convincing victory. Donald Trump earlier rejected the sexual allegations as fake news and phony stuff. Meanwhile, at The Hague, the World Court, Ukraine filed a case against Russia. It's accusing it of illegally annexing Crimea and funding separatist rebel groups in eastern Ukraine, as well as sending troops there. The AP and other media have reported that humanitarian aid sent to eastern Ukraine has been mismanaged and often sent to rebel troops. Ukraine has asked the World Court to order interim measures while the case is ongoing.
Our vote to leave the European Union was no rejection of the values we share. The decision to leave the EU represents no desire to become more distant to you, our friends and neighbours. It was no attempt to do harm to the EU itself or to any of its remaining member states.
In Britain, with Brexit underway, the new Prime Minister, Theresa May, makes it quite clear that she seeks no compromise deal or partial partnership as Britain quits the European Union.
We are leaving the European Union, but we are not leaving Europe. And that is why we seek a new and equal partnership between an independent, self-governing global Britain and our friends and allies in the EU. Not partial membership of the European Union, associate membership of the European Union, or anything that leaves us half in, half out. We do not seek to adopt a model already enjoyed by other countries. We do not seek to hold on to bits of membership as we leave. No, the United Kingdom is leaving the European Union. And my job is to get the right deal for Britain as we do.
Markets rallied during the Prime Minister's speech, which shored up certainty about leaving the EU. According to Reuters, Brexit talks are expected to be one of the most complicated negotiations in post-World War II European history. It will decide the fate of Prime Minister Theresa May's premiership, the United Kingdom, and possibly the future shape of the European Union itself. And you're listening to the news on WBAI. In New York. Meanwhile, globally, protests against the inauguration of Donald Trump and his policies are growing. 370 sister marches on six continents are scheduled. They are expected to draw 700,000 in cities from Paris to Nairobi to Sydney. In London, women will protest Trump, but they are also protesting the wave of far-right hate.
It's a global resistance to what Trump represents.
David Cobb is campaign manager with the Jill Stein campaign.
Remember that there is a global rising right-wing fascism that we are seeing all across Europe, and Trump is an example of that as well. So there is a growing resistance movement, not just to Donald Trump, but to the right-wing populist threat that it represents. And to be clear, we are approaching a which side are you on moment. And you cannot serve Wall Street bankers and the financial class and ordinary people at the same time.
Cobb says the Jill Stein Ajamu Baraka campaign has geared up for the week of protests in D.C. to set the agenda into the future. He lays out their plans.
We are joining 50 to 100,000 people or more going into D.C. in active protest against the neo-fascism associated with the Trump campaign and the Trump presidency. I think it's important that we recognize in the Green Party, we were opposed to the neo-fascism of Donald Trump, just as we were opposed to the neoliberalism of Hillary Clinton that created the circumstances for Donald Trump. We were planning Occupy inauguration even when we all assumed that it would be Hillary Clinton. So we are still moving forward. We will be in protest on Friday. On Saturday, the Green Party will be hosting a live stream called Inaugurate the Resistance, a 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. telethon with movement leaders from across the country. Saturday night, I'm especially excited because Jill Stein, Shama Sawant, Chris Hedges, Tim Canova, Chase Iron Eyes will all be part of a panel that evening that will also be live streamed on Jill Stein's Facebook page. On Sunday, we'll be part of a progressive summit to think about how does the progressive community come together to oppose neo-fascism without falling back into neoliberalism. Something very exciting is happening here, and I encourage WBAI listeners to join us if possible in Washington, D.C., and if you can't join us in D.C., go to Dr. Jill Stein's Facebook page and follow us online.
What do you really think this resistance is going to accomplish?
Listen, Donald Trump has been very clear that he does not care what the majority thinks. He is a dominator of the worst order. I think this resistance is much more about how do we begin to relate to one another, how do progressive Democrats, Greens, independents, and socialists find common ground to build an alternative. I don't think that this protest is actually going to stop Donald Trump from doing anything. I think that this is the first step in us finding commonality, finding some organizational unity, how to build a united front.
David Cobb, 2004 presidential nominee for the Green Party. He's campaign manager for Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka. Fran Luck is executive producer of WBAI's long-running feminist program, The Joy of Resistance. She gives us a preview of the Women's March coming up this Saturday.
The Women's March on Washington is a protest rally and march for women's rights, and it's a response to plans by the Trump administration to eliminate gains that women have made. It's also a response to plans by the administration to criminalize vulnerable groups such as immigrants and Muslims. It's scheduled for this coming Saturday, January 21st, beginning with a rally at the intersection of Independence Avenue and 3rd Street near the Capitol building. The rally begins there at 10 a.m. and is going to last until 1:15 p.m. Over 200,000 people have pledged to attend, but many more are expected. Chartered buses have been fully booked for weeks, but you can still get there by Greyhound. You can find out more about the march, read its mission statement, and for a map of the route, go to womensmarch.com. Fran Luck, WBAI News, New York.
A federal appeals court says protesters who are planning to demonstrate against Donald Trump cannot gather on key portions of the inaugural parade route. The ruling today upholds the National Park Service regulations, which say most of the area known as Freedom Plaza and the sidewalks in front of the Trump International Hotel are limited to bleacher seating. The Act Now to Stop War and End Racism Coalition argued that the restrictions favored the incoming administration over dissent speech, but the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia says the regulations don't infringe on protesters' speech rights. Judge Cornelia Pillard said just 13% of the parade route was set aside for presidential inaugural committee bleachers, while 70% of the route is open to the public. In other news, feminist lawyer Gloria Allred announced her client Summer Zervos filed a lawsuit against Donald Trump. The suit alleges the president-elect used his platform to publicly denigrate her and other women, accusing him of unwanted sexual touching. Zervos, a former apprentice contestant, first came forward with the accusations in the weeks leading up to the 2016 election. Attorney Gloria Allred.
In order to obtain justice and allow the truth to be determined, we believe that it's necessary for Mr. Trump to answer Ms. Zervos' allegations in a court of law, rather than in his bedroom by tweeting in the middle of the night. Summer is very brave to have brought this lawsuit. She knows that she will be attacked by Mr. Trump and his supporters and defenders, but she is willing to endure and suffer unwarranted attacks against her in order to vindicate her rights. We applaud her courage and hope that millions of people will support her in her journey to justice.
Allred says the impact the suit will have depends on Donald Trump. It depends on his reaction to the filing of this lawsuit. She says in the event they are able to take his deposition under oath, Trump will have the responsibility to testify truthfully. In other news, the Fort Lauderdale airport shooter blamed government mind control, later the influence of jihadi chat rooms, for his shooting rampage. This is according to prosecutors during a detention hearing today. WBAI's Rebecca Miles has more.
The man who left five people dead and injured six others after going on a shooting rampage on January the 6th in the Terminal 2 baggage claim was held without bond during a detention hearing on Tuesday. The suspected shooter, Esteban Santiago, initially blamed his action on government mind control, but later said he'd been on the dark web communicating in jihadi chat rooms, the FBI testified in court. They said Santiago admitted to planning the attack. He was first interviewed by FBI agents and sheriff deputies from the airport. An agent confirmed Santiago used a 9mm gun in the airport massacre, and that he'd practiced firing the weapon at a gun range in Alaska in months prior to the attack. The agent said it was the same weapon that Anchorage, Alaska police seized when Santiago was hospitalized for 6 days for mental health problems in November. Prior to the hospitalization, Santiago had gone to the FBI Anchorage office and told agents his mind was being controlled by the government and he was being pushed to watch terrorist propaganda. Prosecutors said when Santiago was released from psychiatric care, doctors believed he was stable. He was prescribed anti-anxiety medication and melatonin. Police then returned the weapon to Santiago in December, according to agents. Santiago has not been formally charged, but he could face the death penalty if convicted. He has yet to enter a plea. He'll be back in court on January 30th for an arraignment hearing. Rebecca Miles, WBAI News, New York.
And we are in difficult days now. I know that. I know you feel that, because I feel that way as well. And I hear it when I talk to people around this country. Many worry that Dr. King's dream and all that has flowed from it is at risk, like never before.
U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch gave her final speech over the weekend.
In my travels, I've seen that concern. I have seen the disconnect between the forces of our government and the communities that we serve. I've seen the concerns that the voting booth will be moved out of reach, that our hearts will close along with our borders, and that a prayer in a different tongue or a different posture will place one at deadly risk. And I've seen the fear that once again we will let a distinction without a difference govern our view of our fellow Americans rather than what is in their hearts. I've seen the fear that with the turn of the electoral wheel, so many of us will be seen as children of a lesser God. I have seen that. I've heard you. But let me tell you what else I've seen as I have traveled this great country. I've seen people speaking out and marching and organizing and gathering in the time-honored tradition that has made this country stronger. That's what I've seen. And in their cries for justice, I've heard their belief that it can be attained.
Lynch spoke Sunday at Birmingham, Alabama's 16th Street Baptist Church. That's where four girls were killed in a KKK bombing in 1963. Echoing Reverend Dr. King's words after the bombing, Lynch said not to give in to despair.
Justice!
Last night, protesters honoring Dr. Martin Luther King marched throughout Harlem. At least two were arrested as demonstrators chanted, "Leave us alone, arrest your own." Thanks to @AshAgony for that sound. And today, an NYPD hearing began at One Police Plaza for the officer Richard Haste, who shot and killed Ramarlee Graham in his own home, in his own bathroom, in front of his grandmother and little brother back in 2012. The hearing was held in a very small courtroom with about 100 seats. Many stood outside waiting to get in, but the room was filled to capacity. In opening statements, NYPD lawyer Beth Douglas said Haste used poor judgment by forcing his way into a Bronx apartment and firing on Ramarlee Graham. Other officers reported the 18-year-old had a gun. No weapon was ever found. Bronx Councilmember Andy King was in the courtroom today.
Well, the opening statements on both parties was set and designed to advocate for their own specific interests. but I believe that the people have all the cards, have all the right information that's designed to make sure that Romali Graham killing the perpetrator is brought to justice, and that's Officer Hayes. I think there's no other way around it. You know, the material that's coming out reflects that something went wrong, that there was a clear violation of police policy, and when you're entering any type of home or apartment when a suspected perpetrator has a weapon, the violations that committed once they entered and how they gained entrance into the house, you know, with weapons drawn. I mean, all this is being discussed and is being talked about. So I feel confident that the commissioner who was listening to all this information will write a report that will only lead Commissioner O'Neill, who has made a commitment that he wants to make sure that the decisions that are made help heal New York. So I'm looking forward to the killers. And I'm not just talking about Richard Hayes, also the sergeant and McLaughlin, who was also his partner, who went in there. They all should be held accountable, but it all starts with a guilty decision against Richard Hayes. That's the only way this works.
And council member, the Graham family was in the courtroom, and so were the mothers of the movement. Can you paint a picture? Tell us what it was like inside the courtroom.
Well, inside the courtroom, yes, we had family members, grandma, Romali Graham's grandmother, Constance, was there, his great aunts, his cousins were there, a host of community activists and support were there for the family. And basically that's what it was. And other than whether the press that was in there, but it was all a dedicated support for Constance, regardless, because you never know. You know, we've done all the right things. We've advocated correctly. We've marched. We've asked for justice. And we've done it without flipping New York City. So all we're asking right now is that you've asked us to trust you. And even though y'all tripped us up, you've asked us to trust you. Now we're at the state of the game where you can deliver what you need to deliver to heal New York. And it's up to this process to come back with a verdict and a decision that helps Constance and the family bring closure and someone being held accountable for the killing of our son.
And going forward, what do you see in the coming days? This is not going to just end tomorrow. This hearing is going to probably span the week, wouldn't you think?
Yes. They're back again tomorrow at 10 o'clock and for the rest of the week. And I believe there's a few days early on the docket for them next week if they don't conclude this week. So we anticipate at least a good 7 days of conversation and with the commissioner writing up her report. And getting it and having a decision made, and we're looking for Commissioner O'Neill to, you know, come through swiftly with a decision and not prolong the process. You know, February 2nd will be 5 years, and actually on February 12th will be Romali's, I believe, or his birthday. So I say this, Commissioner O'Neill, give the family a birthday present for Romali Graham. And find his killer.
Police reform advocates and those who want to support the Graham family are urged to pack the court. That's at One Police Plaza, the fourth floor. Try getting there early by about 9 a.m. to make sure that you get in. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. The company which is building the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline wants a federal judge to block the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers from launching a full environmental study. This of the $3.8 billion pipeline's disputed crossing of a Missouri River reservoir in North Dakota. Texas-based Energy Transfer Partners has asked the U.S. District Judge James Boasberg to stop the Corps from publishing a notice in the Federal Register tomorrow, this announcing the study. Energy Transfer Partners maintains that the pipeline is safe and that the Corps gave it permission in July to proceed with the Lake Oahe stretch, but the Corps says all of the necessary steps have not yet been completed, including an easement to work on federal land and the notification of Congress. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe has been urging people to lobby the Corps to start the environmental impact study before President-elect Donald Trump, who's an energy supporter, takes office this Friday. Energy Transfer Partners partners has already drilled entry and exit holes for the Oahe crossing, all on private property. It has already put oil in the pipeline leading up to the lake in anticipation of finishing the project, according to Energy Transfer Partners Executive Vice President Joey Mahmood. WBAI's Earth Mom spoke today with one of the water protectors. He is an elder who has been part of the Sacred Stone Camp at Standing Rock in North Dakota from the beginning.
Even with sub-zero weather and snow, the struggle between DAPL, the Dakota Access Pipeline, and the water protectors continues. During a peaceful prayer walk on Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Day, water protectors walked to the DAPL drill pad site and were met with tear gas, pepper spray, and rubber bullets. We spoke with Robert Etter, an elder and member of the local Cannonball community near Standing Rock.
We went and approached the fence and start singing by the fence. And while we were standing there singing, all of a sudden they started amassing, you know, because they knew we were coming. Because they'd seen us, you know, a long ways off. And when we got there, started praying, and, you know, they tried to cut the fence. Then they started shooting with rubber bullets. So we stayed, sang some more. You know, stood there for about a couple hours, and then some people started leaving, and then it started getting rough again. They started shooting at people because more people were stepping across the fence. You know, they finally got it cut, and they started stepping across the fence. But I started to leave because, you know, I walked out there, and I'm older. I'm 64, so they were giving me a ride. And then what I heard when I got back was, just after I got back, some of them were talking to the cops, and some of the cops were actually, you know, feeling bad about it, which was good. But most of them, for the most part, you know, they're there to do that job, and they're going to do things like that. So, you know, they had their helicopter intimidating us all evening after that, too. They just kept flying over the camp after we got back.
Later that day, the water protectors went on a prayer walk to the front line at the barricade on Route 1806, and although unarmed as usual, they were once again met with rubber bullets and tear gas. We spoke with water protector Nick Fromm, a South Dakota native.
We went out there peaceful as always, unarmed, in prayer to the bridge, and when I got there, the police were already there, but they were kind of in the shadows, so to speak. They had these big floodlights that they bring out, you know, to light us up, but they were kind of hiding behind those. And anyways, we were kind of breaking down the barrier, moving aside the Constantine wire, like we were doing at the other prayer walk, to, you know, break down the barrier between people to be able to reach out to them better, you know, not have that in the way. And they responded with quite a bit of aggression. The police came out and were shooting rubber bullets, using tear gas, doing all sorts of non-lethal weapons against us.
Water protectors like Robert Etter and Nick Fromm have pledged to continue to protect Mother Earth and water. Earth Mom, WBAI News, New York.
No one likes us, I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one and see what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful?
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Tuesday, January 17, 2017. The news was produced with Fran Love, Rebecca Miles, Earth Mom, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York. We're listening to Randy Newman. We're going out with Let's Drop the Big One.
Africa's far too hot and Canada's too cold. South America stole our name. Let's drop the big one. There'll be no one left to blame us. We'll save Australia. Don't wanna hurt no kangaroo. We'll build an all-American amusement park there. They got surfing too. Boom goes London. Boom Paris. More room for you and more room for me. In every city, the whole world round.
how peaceful it would be. We set everybody free. You wear a Japanese kimono, baby, to be a tie your shoes to me. They all hate us anyhow. So let's drop the big one now. Let's drop the big one now.